Trail v. Kulik, Mr. Schwartz.
May it please the court. My client, Jose Trejo, is in prison for 30 years on constitutionally insufficient evidence. This is the rare but genuine case where the evidence will not support a conviction, even against the high standards imposed by the AEDPA and the Jackson test for taking the evidence in the light most favorable to the prosecution. 3 points. Three witnesses against him. Patricia Negrete never implicated him. Her testimony at trial was not about Mr. Trejo, but what about she said to the state's attorney. She got that demonstrably wrong. Her earlier statement...
But why couldn't the jury have at least interpreted this statement, even if you're right, and even if kind of literally she was recounting what she said to the state's attorney, there remains the fact that in the trial, the jury hears her say, you know, Trejo was there, whether it's in the form of, I told the state's attorney that Trejo was there, or whether she just says Trejo was there. More or less, the jury hears an account from her that Trejo was there. Again, remembering what you began with, that this is habeas, that this is AEDPA, that this is all of these layers of deferential review, why couldn't the jury take that statement, take Mr. Garibay's admittedly fuzzy recollections, but perhaps most importantly take Mr. Gonzalez's account, put it together and say, okay, we're, you know, not the jury, but the trial, you know what I mean, the court, and say, that's enough. You know, maybe it's not the greatest case you've ever seen, but the court would be entitled to find that Trejo was involved.
Well, let's take the things bit by bit.
Well, I know you want to take them bit by bit, but of course, what the court says is, as to the co-defendants, there's only one thing on each of these points, but as to Trejo, by the time you have three different ways of involving Trejo, that's enough to feel confident about.
That might be true if you actually did have three different things, but you don't. With regard to Ms. Negrete's testimony, it's quite clear that the only questions she answers at trial are about what was in the statement that's prepared by the state's attorney. She said, I seen this happen. Okay, and it's your testimony, the prosecutor sums it up, it's your testimony that you told the state's attorney that you saw Mr. Trejo there? She says, yes. And then he says, what did you see Mr. Trejo do? And she says, nothing. That's the record evidence. So she's quite clear on what question she's asking.
So is it really your point then, not that this doesn't place Mr. Trejo in the scene, but that it's just a mere presence piece of testimony?
Oh, absolutely not. It doesn't place Mr. Trejo at the scene at all. She's misrecollecting her earlier testimony.
Well, that seems to me excessive. If you're trying to say, at the most, she said he was standing there, then, you know, I could certainly see why you might make an argument
on
that.
But she doesn't even say that. She says, later on, she says, I said he was standing there, but when she asked, was he standing there, she says, nobody. She didn't see nothing, she didn't see nobody.
Well, that was a credibility issue for the trial court, though, wasn't it? Because at one point she says, I told the state's attorney that he was there, what was he doing, nothing. Then later on she changes her testimony.
Your Honor, she never, the only testimony that she changed is that about what she said. She never told the state's attorney that he was there. If you look at the earlier testimony, it's quite clear the state's attorney, speaking to the grand jury, she said that the co-defendant Villalobos was there. She never mentioned Mr. Trejo. If you look at the relevant parts of the record, they're quite clear. And in fact, the states have six opportunities to present some evidence that she said earlier that he was there, and they failed to do it.
Let's switch to Mr. Gonzalez, because time is so short. I know your principal argument on Mr. Gonzalez is that if his testimony wasn't good enough for Vasquez, then it can't be good enough for Mr. Trejo either. But that's not the way things work. I mean, if the trial court is convinced that Mr. Gonzalez is accurately reporting Trejo's admission to the murder, that would be sufficient evidence, wouldn't it?
But the question is, we're not arguing inconsistent verdicts here.
No, I know you're not, and you're trying very hard to stay away from that. But the fact is, you have Gonzalez's testimony. Why isn't it enough?
Well, the trial court, whose determinations we are bound by 2254, clearly found that it wasn't enough.
No, not so clearly. The trial court never makes the statement, "I don't think Gonzalez was telling the truth." Never says that.
He does better. He acquits.
He acquits one person.
And then the Illinois appellate court tells us, whose decisions we are also bound to if reasonable, and I think this is reasonable, says the difference is not that there was some difference between the two testimonies with regard to Vasquez and with regard to Trejo. Rather, it says, oh, with Mr. Trejo, there are these other people. But the point is, our point is, there aren't these other people. Magretti doesn't testify against Mr. Trejo. Garibay's testimony is constitutionally unreliable. So, given what the Illinois appellate court itself says, says that one's not enough, one's all you got, at best, and that one, we know that the trial court found insufficient for acquittal.
But of course, number one, once the other person's been acquitted, that issue isn't before the Illinois Court of Appeals, because we don't take appeals from acquittals in criminal cases. For all we know, had that been before the court, it might have done something different. And the trial court may have been bending over backwards to apply the reasonable doubt standard.
What do you think she meant when she testified that she had, why do you think she testified that she had identified Trejo in her statement to the state's attorney?
Well, the prosecutor herself remarks that she's got some difficulty saying the same thing from one time to another. That's actually in the record.
My question, why do you think she said that?
I couldn't venture to speculate. This is a young woman who's kind of mixed up. She's under a lot of pressure. She's perhaps under medical treatment, and she's very nervous. So he gets her saying something. She gets on a roll, but she's actually quite consistent when she's on that roll about what she's testifying to. And the prosecutor himself understands quite clearly the difference between the line of questions he's pursuing about what she said about her earlier testimony. That's how he sums it up. So it's your testimony that you told the state's attorney this. And then he switches to, what did you see? And she says, nothing. That's the record evidence. That's all the record evidence there is with regard to Negretti's statement about Mr. Trejo. The only thing she says about Mr. Trejo is about her earlier statement, and we know that's wrong. Perhaps I should say a word about Mr. Garibay.
Sure.
Mr. Garibay's testimony is insufficient under the light of the relevant governing Supreme Court standard, Biggers-Manson standard of reliability.
Is it your argument that there actually really is no identification because all he ever says is looks like, et cetera, or is it your argument that it's just an unreliable identification?
I say it's an unreliable identification. It's not positive. If you look at what he says, you compare it to the bigger standard. The state has had a lot of opportunities to present a case where cases as defective on every element of the bigger standard. Opportunity to view, degree of attention, accuracy of prior description, level of certainty, time before identification was accepted as reliable. It hasn't done it. Okay? And when you look at the cases where courts have actually considered those elements, you look at Grant, they found that insufficient for probable cause on facts that are actually stronger against the defendant than they are against Mr. Trejo. And in a habeas case, Holmes, again, on facts that are stronger against the defendant than Mr. Trejo, the court found it constitutionally insufficient for conviction. So on one hand, you have no cases that the state has produced where their cases, a Biggers-Manson case, this week has been found reliable. And on the other hand, you've got two circuit cases saying that it's not enough for probable cause or not enough for conviction, the latter being a habeas case. So we've got a case that's pretty close to the line, at best. Personally, I don't think it actually is very close to the line, but at best it's close to the line, taking the high standard that we've got to get. The Illinois Appellate Court says it required three to get it over that line. If I can knock out one, that's probably enough to take it down below the line. If I can knock out two, the Illinois Appellate Court says one's not enough. I think we can knock out all three. We have unreliable testimony, which, to answer your first question, Judge Wood, cannot support Gonzalez's insufficient testimony as determined by the state trial court. And Negrete's non-testimony, 0 + 0 = 0. 0 + 0 + 0 = 0. Further questions? Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schwartz. Mr. Griffin?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Colleen Griffin from the Illinois Attorney General's Office on behalf of the respondent.
Ms. Griffin, I have an initial question to ask you. As I understand the summaries of Ms. Negrete's written statements and the state's attorney and the grand jury testimony, they made no mention of Trejo. And I find it close to inconceivable that if she had actually mentioned Trejo when she was talking to the state's attorney, that the state's attorney would have said, well, I'm just not going to write down the name of another person who was involved in something as grave as a murder. So why isn't it incredibly clear that, you know, she misspeaks or that she otherwise is mistaken when she says, I told the state's attorney that Trejo was there? It's a contemporaneous record of the state's attorney, unless we think the state's attorney just randomly doesn't write names down, shows to the contrary.
Well, Your Honor, admittedly, it was not in the written statement that with which Negrete was impeached at trial, because she was being testified. She was testifying as an adverse witness.
And my problem is, I mean, I think more highly of the state's attorneys than that. I can't believe that when they're taking such witness statements, they just don't write down the name of a potential co-murderer.
Well, Your Honor, she did testify that. She told the state's attorney.
I know she said that, but I'm trying to go back to the original thing, because then she, of course, takes it back, and then she says, what did Mr. Trejo do? Nothing, you know, didn't involve everything. Every other piece of evidence in this record suggests that she had never said any such thing to the state's attorney.
Well, Your Honor, that was a determination for the trier of fact, and I'd like to, in the same
and
vein...
Even, and on top of that, if, in fact, she says, I saw him there, what was he doing? Nothing. I'm a little surprised to think that somebody standing there doing nothing is guilty of murder.
That is not the testimony that she said. She said several times, and it's in their Exhibit N, I can give exact citations for the record. She said, I told the state's attorney...
I'd appreciate if you would give exact... citations to the record, because I had an awful lot of trouble finding any kind of citation. Didn't lend any support for the state's position that I saw. So I'd be really grateful.
On page E304. She says, I told the state's attorney that I saw Aggie and Vicious do it. Says specifically, what? And the state's attorney asked her, what did you see them do? Kill Gizmo? Kill what? Kill Gizmo. Is your testimony that you told the state's attorney you saw Aggie and who killed Gizmo? Vicious, being the petitioner.
What's the page?
Petitioner's Exhibit N at E304. And the reason she's being asked these questions in this manner is because she's testifying as an adverse witness. So she is going to testify that she didn't say any of this and she never saw anything. And that's the reason she's being asked these questions in this manner, is because she's testifying as an adverse witness. So the trial court was free to credit Negrete's testimony that she told the state's attorney and police that she saw a petitioner in the alley with Villalobos and she saw him kill the victim. Um, If there's no any other questions about Negrete's testimony, I'd like to...
Well, I think what you're really saying is that she wouldn't have testified so emphatically as to what she told the state's attorney if she wasn't remembering what she'd seen.
Correct, Your Honor. And the fact that it was impeached by its omission in her written statement to the state's attorney was a question of fact. For the trier of fact, a question of credibility. Again, she was testifying an adverse witness. The trial court had to wade through all her testimony and find out what it believed to be the truth, and credited her testimony as substantive evidence.
I don't have the record in front of me, but other than page E304, is there any other citation that you can help us with?
No, I believe once again on 305, she reiterates again that she told the state's attorney and the police that she saw a petitioner right there in the alley with Villalobos, but that is the extent of her testimony regarding what she told the state's attorney regarding the petitioner. Moving to Gonzalez's testimony, the petitioner believes that Gonzalez's testimony was incredible because co-defendant Vasquez was acquitted. The court never said that Gonzalez was incredible. All the court did was acquit Vasquez. Again, the petitioner tried to separate each person's testimony and look at it in isolation. The appellate court credited all the testimony, saying that there were three pieces of evidence and that they all corroborated each other to some extent. The Gonzalez's testimony alone would be sufficient to convict the petitioner in this case, and the fact that Vasquez was acquitted means nothing regarding petitioner's case. Juan Garibay's testimony, the petitioner suggests that it doesn't meet the Biggers-Manson factors. However, the question is not whether this court is analyzing the factors in the first instance, as the petitioner seems to suggest by a citation to Grant and other non-habeas corpus cases. The question is whether the appellate court's determination that any rational trier of fact could have credited the witness's identification was unreasonable in light of the facts before it.
That's right, and the facts are pretty weak.
Again,
middle of the night, down the alley, some guy who 7 months earlier parked his car. I mean, you know, maybe this guy's got an amazing memory for faces, but I'm not sure I could pick out somebody who 7 months earlier parked a car in my neighborhood if I saw them without my glasses in the middle of the night.
Well, he testified at trial that he sees well without his glasses. There was nothing to refute that except that he had glasses to drive. It didn't even say he had prescription glasses to drive.
Vision actually has to be pretty miserable for the state of Illinois not to allow you to drive. Actually, probably too bad.
No, there was no evidence regarding his prescription, though, and he said he saw well, and the trial court obviously credited that when assessing whether his identification was reliable. The police officer, Sanchez, who was at the lineup, stated that Garibay at that time was positive in his identification.
But Garibay himself never says, "I'm positive this was the man." He says, "It looks like the man." You know, there are probably people in this courtroom who look like any of us.
At the lineup, he positively identifies the petitioner. Prior to that, at the photo array, he does say he looks like him, but there is a positive identification in the lineup.
Of course, you know all the social science evidence that shows the more times you've picked out a face, the more likely you are pick out that same face again.
Yes, Your Honor. That again would go to whether, I mean, the opportunity to witness to view at the time of the crime, which is the first Biggers factor, is actually bolstered by the fact that...
Terrible. It's the middle of the night and he's running down an alley.
But it is bolstered by the fact that he had previously seen him, so he could recognize...
7 months earlier parking the car, right? Well, how do we know it was him? 7 months early, did we keep track of where we park cars?
No, and there was no testimony regarding that, but he did testify it was
him earlier,
but
it could have been any Hispanic guy, right?
He believes it is the same guy, and the trial court believed the testimony.
No, this isn't like, you know, he was my customer at a store, or he goes to my church, or anything. I mean, there's nothing to make us believe that this was the person he saw before.
Except that he testified that. Except that he did identify him in a lineup.
He looks like the man I saw before. Then we get the lineup, but I'm saying the lineup comes after all of these other very problematic steps.
If the only evidence against Mr. Trejo is the confession overheard by Gonzalez, would that be enough?
Yes, it would, Your Honor. Again, the fact that Vasquez was acquitted doesn't have anything to do with the case against petitioner. We have no idea why the child court acquitted Vasquez. He could have been exercising lenity. He could have been doing anything. The child court was not under any obligation to set forth his reasons for the record. Again, a petitioner does not suggest that this is an inconsistent verdict case, but if he was, there would be no reason to overturn the case. Would be the acquittal of Vasquez would be no reason to overturn the case.
Was there any physical evidence at all tying Trejo to the crime?
Well,
or did the court rely solely on, you know, the three witnesses?
Well, I think that's the difference too with Gonzalez's testimony against Vasquez and as against the petitioner. Gonzalez specifically says that petitioner says, "I shot him with my .22," and the evidence regarding the autopsy report indicates that the victim was shot with a .38 and a .22. So the trial court may have been looking at that testimony as a little bit more evidence against the petitioner than against Vasquez. Other than that, there was
no... Did it
no
show that it was this particular .22? Did they do any bullet tracing tests?
No, Your Honor. No, there was no .22 ever entered into evidence.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Griffin.
Thank you.
Mr. Schwartz, your time expired. If you want a minute, you can have a minute. Or if you don't, it doesn't matter.
Very briefly, Your Honor. The state says that if Gonzalez were the only testimony against my client, that would be enough. But that's not what the Illinois Appellate Court said.
Yeah, that's fine, but you have Gonzalez, you have Galabay, whatever his name is, and you have her, you know, reading over her testimony, she was so emphatic about what she had told the state's attorney. Doesn't that suggest she was testifying to what she remembered? Now, of course, when asked point blank, what did she see, she says nothing because she is determined not to cooperate. But how else would she remember so emphatically what she told the state's attorney?
She misremembers things
that
from one time.
That doesn't sound like misremembering at all, because she's extremely emphatic. But then when she's asked what did you see, she says nothing, which is, you know, resuming her obstructionist role. She's right. Not going to cooperate. She's adverse. So when asked outright, she says nothing. But she's not presumably a very sophisticated person. So when she's not asked outright, what did you see, but instead, what was in the statement, she's very emphatic as to what she told him. And what she told him, I would think, is what she remembered.
We know what's in the statement, isn't it?
Why would she remember what was in it? She says she didn't read the statement,
but she doesn't remember what's in the statement. We know she doesn't remember what's in the statement because it was read in
the
record.
That's being very literal about what she is communicating.
But that's the record, Your Honor. I mean, we're just...
Well, I know, but the judge had to put together these little shreds of evidence and see whether it added up to, you know, some reasonable basis for supposing him guilty.
May I offer you an analogy, Your Honor? Suppose I walked out of this courtroom and told people, this court decided in favor of my client right here on the bench. Of course, you've done no such thing. You don't do it that way.
That's a
very bad
analogy.
The way I remember it.
Extremely bad analogy.
And would it give
really
you any evidence about
analogy.
What you've done? I don't think so.
No. It's flawed in a thousand ways. Too reasoned. It's you. It's not her. It's...
Suppose I'd done it later.
Yeah.
But
okay, thank you, Mr. Schwartz.
Okay.
Okay, we'll move on to our next case, Barnett.